tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. On demand. This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2 o'clock hour. This is Brady and Walker. We'll check in with Andrew Walker, who will go to Oilers Red Wings tonight. Might even take the pregame skate. Like, that's illegal. He shouldn't even be doing that. That'll be around 2:15, 2:20. So I promise this. Dez Bryant was talking a lot of trash yesterday, and Josh Norman, the Hurricanes cornerback, called him out on it after the game, and they said Bryant just wouldn't shut up during warmups. Really? I'm so surprised. Dez Bryant didn't say anything about Norman, but Norman's teammates told him that he did. Norman responded by playing a fantastic game, 33-14 win, easy victory, and Dez Bryant caught one ball for 6 yards. Here's his quote about Dez Bryant. This is Josh Norman, Carolina Panthers, 11-0 DB. He shouldn't have ticked off my DBs in pregame. That took me to a whole other place. Once that happened, you can't get me fired up enough. I'm telling you, I'm going to be at your throat for four quarters every time. The disrespect was just through the roof. Norman went on to say, the Cowboys should ask Dez Bryant for some of his new $70 million contract back. Or I can go you one better. Shouldn't have given him the $70 million in the first place. Remember they were going to franchise Dez Bryant? They did franchise Dez Bryant. Slap the tag on him. Got a scenario which is, hey, Dez, prove you're a grown-up. Prove you're not a little boy. Prove you're a grown-up. There's little boys, and then there's grown-ups. You don't give little boys $70 million. Can't be doing that. Smart boys? Sure. Talented boys? Yeah, I guess. If you're a boy, you're a boy. If you're a man, you're a man. Dez Bryant hasn't proven he's worthy of a $70 million contract just yet. And everybody and their brother who enables players like Dez Bryant love the deal, good for the Cowboys, lock him in. How's the season gone? I mean, he can't help getting injured, and Tony Romo can't help getting injured. But when Dez has played, there's been either yelling, ineffectiveness, irritating the other team. There's no semblance of act like you've been there with Dez Bryant. You're going to give $70 million to a player that you are forced to follow around. You follow him to restaurants. You follow him to grocery stores. The Cowboys have had a security detail that follows Dez Bryant everywhere he goes without telling Dez Bryant. And you're going to give that guy $70 million over 5 years. This is why Johnny Manziel will be a Dallas Cowboy next fall. There isn't a doubt in my mind. Now, if he's awful in training camp, yes, there's a chance he won't be there. But it makes a lot more sense than Tim Tebow ever did. Remember, Tim Tebow spent a whole year with the New York Jets. We didn't see him play. It was all about how Rex Ryan was going to utilize him, and Sanchez, Tebow. Is Tebow coming into the goal line? Is Sanchez coming out of the game once he gets you to the 10-yard line? And the bloom wasn't quite off the rose for Mark Sanchez in New York yet. That was a bad year. It was the start of the end, beginning of the end for him. But Tebow didn't work out there. Then he goes to the New England Patriots training camp. Not much happened in the summer of 2013. We found out Aaron Hernandez was a serial killer, and we found out Tim Tebow couldn't play football in training camp. But nonetheless, Johnny Manziel is going to get a second chance because guys like him tend to. And the only team that will enable him towards a second chance are the Dallas Cowboys. And the only GM, who's also the owner, that'll enable Johnny Manziel for another chance is Jerry Jones. Tony Romo will be 36 and a half years old. He hasn't played more than 12 games a season in three of the last 6 years. He's 36 and a half. And it took a long time for a lot of us to warm to Tony Romo. This is why last night you watched Jay Cutler. And Cutler wasn't great. I know I'm a Cutler slappy. I got it. I understand. But I'm also the first to admit he had a couple drives last night that were just fantastic. In the cold, in the rain. You're not supposed to go into Lambeau Field and win that game. And it just shows you how much perseverance Jay Cutler had that he was able to pull it off. We are so excited to have our next guest on, a five-time Grey Cup champion and, of course, a former Pro Bowler in the National Football League as well. He has a lot of football to watch this weekend, and he'll be calling maybe the best Sunday afternoon game, Steelers at Seahawks, of course, on the Seahawks radio network. The legendary Hall of Famer Warren Moon joining us on Brady and Walker. It's great to have you on. This is your weekend, isn't it?
It is our weekend. It's a big weekend here in Seattle for the Seahawks, as well as the University of Washington, where I went to school. We got the Apple Cup today.
That's right.
Washington State, and a lot of good football going on this weekend.
And then I read this story about how you've got a special place in your heart for the UBC Thunderbirds, and you've been in touch with Michael O'Connor. So you got a little riding on the line on a lot of huge showdowns this weekend with Vanier Cup going tomorrow.
Yeah, I keep my hands in a lot of different things, and I'm really excited about what UBC has done this year. Coach Niles has really done a great job coming in there and turning over that program, and Michael O'Connor is a big reason why. A big acquisition that they got from Penn State. He's a Canadian player and had a great season so far.
I thought yesterday was really something for quarterbacks. And I want to talk to you about the evolution of the position. Matt Stafford had a great day. He's had three very good weeks in a row, one at Lambeau a couple weeks ago, and then two really good offensive performances. And I mentioned Jay Cutler. You might have heard a little bit of that with Cutler going to Lambeau. They get down early and just not easy to play in those kind of conditions. And he made plays, and he kept drives going. And I just thought this is why we don't see a lot of teams, Warren, give up on quarterbacks. If you can make it through about a 3 or 4 year phase and you can prove something, and both those guys have, Cutler's gone to an NFC title game, Stafford's thrown for 5,000 yards. People don't give up. You shouldn't give up on quarterbacks like that. Tony Romo's, Philip Rivers. Teams stay with those type of players now a lot longer, don't they?
Well, they have to. You know, there's just not a lot of great quarterbacks walking around on the streets out there. Otherwise, they'd be on these teams. So when you have a quarterback that you think you can win with, that you think could be a franchise quarterback, yeah, you do have to roll with them because, like I said, there's just not that many of them out there. So Jay Cutler has had his ups and downs, but definitely yesterday was one of his ups, and definitely with Matthew Stafford as well. He's been as productive as any quarterback over the last probably 4 or 5 years, but just hasn't had the big, big wins to show for it. And some of that is you just have to have a great team around you as well. So he had a great performance yesterday. I don't think it surprised anyone just because he's got that type of ability. He's just got to put it together more consistently.
Warren Moon joining us. 4 Grey Cups with the Edmonton Eskimos and, of course, 9 visits to the Pro Bowl in the NFL. We all wish you'd gotten into the NFL a bit sooner. Circumstances that were kind of negative and unfortunate prevented that. I know you don't begrudge your time in Canada, but you came to the NFL at 28 with Houston. And when I see young quarterbacks now, I understand why guys like Cam play right away and Andrew Luck play right away. Do we have too many guys who are second-rounders, late first-rounders? I'm thinking of guys like Ryan Tannehill and E.J. Manuel was a couple years ago. They're kind of, Geno Smith, kind of being pushed into the fire, Warren, a little too soon. I look at Brock Osweiler and I think this is fantastic. 3 years behind Peyton Manning, you can't ask for a better scenario. We just mentioned Rodgers and he had that with Favre. Quarterbacks are having to go in and figure it all out when they're 22, 23 now, aren't they? At any age, they are.
Yeah, it's kind of always been that way. The problem is you don't get a chance to develop these guys, and there's usually not a good veteran quarterback ahead of them. That's why you're drafting a quarterback that high in the draft. You draft a first-rounder because the guy you have isn't good enough, and most teams aren't going to have the patience to go along with that guy that they're getting somebody drafted for because they want to make a change and get their fan base on the right page to show them that they're doing something to improve the football team. So in a lot of cases, these guys are put out there too quickly, and a lot of them get their confidence destroyed very early in their careers because they're not only just put out there, but they're up there without good people around them. And if you're a young quarterback, you really need good people around you to help make that transition a little bit easier. We've seen guys that have come in and done that, like Ben Roethlisberger, where he wasn't asked to do everything when he first came in. Mm-hmm. He had a good defense and a good running game, but we've also seen other guys who have been asked to carry the load, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You can't stereotype it and put it in a box and say this is always how it should be, but it just feels like guys get a lot less time. I referenced when you were still in the league, even Donovan McNabb got to watch Rodney Peete even for eight games, and he's Donovan McNabb, and he had a great career, but those 8 games were valuable. Even Brady with a year and a half with Bledsoe, there has to be value there for those guys.
It is, and it's unfortunate that those situations aren't everywhere that these young guys come into the league. So some of them are going to have to play a little bit quicker than others, and hopefully they survive the growing pains that young quarterbacks go through early in that process. And some of them don't, some of them do, and that's just kind of the kind of what happens. You kind of roll the dice when you put one of those young guys on the field too quickly.
Warren Moon, kind enough to join us. Five Grey Cups on Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Cross Canada on Sportsnet 360. So you're in Seattle when the big move happens to go Russell Wilson. I want to ask you what a roll of the dice you thought it was at the time, because now it looks like a genius move and a no-brainer. But they sign Matt Flynn away from Green Bay in the offseason, draft Wilson maybe more as a future project. Pete Carroll's come back to the NFL after being great at USC, but he's coming off 2 7-9 seasons. What did you think in camp and in preseason when Pete Carroll says, it's Russell Wilson, this is his team, we're starting the rookie? It's a tremendous risk for a coach, isn't it?
It really is, but if you know Pete, he's all about competition, and he lets every position compete for jobs. And especially when he first came in here, there wasn't anybody on this team that had a job solidified, including the quarterback. That's why they went out and got Matt Flynn, and that's why they drafted Russell Wilson. So once they opened it up to a competition, they let all of them play in the preseason, and they evaluated them very, very carefully. And Russell Wilson was clearly the best quarterback they had on the football team at that time, and he deserved to get the start. And we've seen what happened because of that. And a lot of that is because, again, he had a good team around him. He had a really good defense that he could rely on, and he had a really strong running game. So Russell didn't have to carry the football team. He just had to manage it. He had to make some big plays, which he did, and take very good care of the football. And he did all of those things, and now the rest is history.
The absence of Marshawn Lynch, what does it do to the football team in Seattle over the next month or so? How slim or faint are the hopes that they can get him back around Christmas time and maybe for playoff games?
Well, there's no question that Marshawn is a huge loss, because he's kind of the face of this offense and in some ways the face of this team, because he kind of epitomizes everything they stand for, that physical toughness, grinding it out, running the football physically at the line of scrimmage. But they also have another young kid by the name of Thomas Rawls, who's really filled in well and had over 200 yards last week. If he had another game earlier this season where he had 170 yards where Marshawn didn't play. So they feel confident that they do have somebody that can kind of take over that role until Marshawn gets back. But you want to have a Marshawn Lynch on your football team to try and finish the season if you can, and hopefully they can get him back sometime in December.
Does it feel at all like last year for the Seahawks, because they were, you know, defending conference champs, came out of the gate, defending Super Bowl champs, I should say, came out of the gate, and there's a target, you know how it works. But then they really found their game by November, December. I don't know that they'll have the same record, and the defense is a little bit older. But what I think plays in their favor, Warren, is I'm not sure the NFC is as strong as it's been the last 4 years. I think we've seen teams kind of up and down, Atlanta, Minnesota. There's teams we thought would be contenders. Nobody out of the NFC East is really threatening. And Seattle may be able, of course, Carolina looks the best, but Seattle may be able to slide up the middle and go deep because of all the inconsistency for everybody else.
Yeah, and I think this team is looking at that as well, that the NFC is not as potent as it's been in the past. And if they can somehow, some way get into the playoffs with the experience that they have, and they can go on the road and win anywhere, they have a chance to get right back into the Super Bowl in San Francisco. But they've got to get a string of wins together here really quickly. And if they can do that, and the schedule, I think, permits that, it's going to be a tough battle this week for Pittsburgh, because they have a lot of weapons and a really hot quarterback. But if they can get past this game and put together a winning streak, they have a chance to get in the playoffs. Once you get in, it's just a matter of being hot.
How it's gone with Colin Kaepernick, and I know he's injured, but does it shock you? Did you see any signs of this? I watched that. What a classic NFC title game with Russell Wilson and he 2 years ago. And we're all watching that thinking, this is great football. And these guys will be rivals. Like, we don't know if it'll be, Montana and Sims or some of the great, you know, you had some battles with Boomer Esiason when he was in Cincinnati back and forth, Kelly and Marino, but it looked like a rivalry for the future. I don't feel like we think that now. What do you think happened with Colin in San Fran?
I think they just tried to make Colin something that he really wasn't, and they got away from the things that made him successful, you know, running the read option and things like that, throwing the ball to the tight end a bunch. Vernon Davis was a big weapon for him early in his career. And they tried to make him more of a pocket passer, more of a guy to stay in the pocket and try and throw to all these different wide receivers, and that's just not his game. And so when you have a quarterback, you've got to look at his strengths and his weaknesses and build your offense around what his strengths are. And I don't think San Francisco's done a very good job of that with Colin. And once he started playing bad, his confidence just seemed to falter, and now we are where we are. They're probably done with Colin Kaepernick as far as being in San Francisco for the future.
Hall of Famer Warren Moon joining us on Brady and Walker. So it has to bring back special memories when I say how beloved you are in Canada, in the city of Edmonton, the city of champions, the five Grey Cup titles. I'm curious, long form stuff. Do you look at the CFL from afar? And I heard you on with Colin Coward earlier this week, and he asked you why more guys don't necessarily go up like your Jeff Garcia's, Doug Flutie's, and give it a real crack. What do you see as sort of the future of the CFL? It was thought at the time, you know, players could develop, cut their teeth to some extent there, who couldn't get opportunities in the NFL and come down south. But is it there's not enough money involved? It's got nothing to do with talent. There's some great kids out there, and they don't seem to want to come up here as much.
Well, I think it's all of that. I think every kid that plays in the U.S. would love to be able to play in the U.S. professionally if they can, and they're going to try every opportunity to do that. And it's the same for for maybe a kid that plays hockey up in Canada. They'd love to be able to play their hockey in Canada if they possibly can, even though a lot of the league is spread out around the United States. But I think the fact that money has something to do with it, because the average salary down here is a pretty good average salary. But I don't think there's as many good quarterbacks. And if we're talking quarterbacks now, if you're a quarterback, you have a chance to play in the NFL, because there's not as many good quarterbacks coming out, and there's a good chance for you to make a football team. So I think back when I came out, there were a lot more good quarterbacks, and you just ran out of the numbers. So like I said, if most guys had their druthers, they would love to be able to play in the National Football League coming out of college, because that's where you were born. That's where you grew up, with those dreams. And I had those same dreams, but I was also more realistic that I'm going to go wherever they're going to give me a chance to play quarterback. So that's where my opportunity came in Canada. And I'm forever grateful for that opportunity. And I had a great time up there and really enjoyed the experience, and was able to move on and still realize my dream in the NFL.
Yeah, it could have been a happier ending, and great success on both sides of the border. So, all right, so your three play this weekend is the UBC Thunderbirds, the Edmonton Eskimos, the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. You're hoping to go 3-0.
I'd love to go 4-0. I got my University of Washington.
The Huskies
today.
Against the Cougars.
That's right. So I've got four games that I'm really looking at closely. Three of them, two of them are championship games, so hopefully I'm definitely winner in those two championship games. So those are two big ones.
Now the rings will be in the mail. Warren, thank you so much for this. Folks love hearing you on this side of the border. You know that. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Well, thanks for having me on. And to all the fans out there, I really appreciate all the support you've given me over the years. And have a great holiday season coming up.
Warren Moon on Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Hall of Fame quarterback, Seahawks radio analyst. It's Seattle and Pittsburgh. That's a big one, 425, with a lot of playoff implications. Because like we said, who are you scared of? Green Bay, Minnesota, Giants, Atlanta. None of these teams are blowing anyone's doors off with consistent play lately. Some of the more consistent teams are the teams now under 500 or getting to 500. Tampa's been as good as anybody offensively the last 3 weeks. So great to have Warren Moon on. Travis Lule coming up after 2:40. We'll also script out what a Jose Bautista contract extension offer would indeed look like. And still Doug McClain on the show. Well, we couldn't hook up with him yesterday because all the yells from all the touchdowns Chip Kelly's Eagles were giving up was causing some radio interference. But we tracked him down. The second half of Andrew of Brady and Walker joins us now from the lovely state of Michigan, his 29th favorite state, just behind Utah. We found Walker in Michigan. How's it going so far?
What do you want?
You offered, you said you'd invoice a lunch payment for the Bills Patriots, and we'd make it two lunches if you appeared on the show today and killed 6 minutes. That's what.
That is true. Ford Field's technological advancements are not up to snuff, so we couldn't hook up yesterday, but that was good. I was right. The Eagles are pay no attention to the Eagles. They're not very good. Your boy Mark Sanchez was not very good. I mean, where was that? I guess you got to give credit to Jim Bob Cooter right now, because the Lions look like as good of offensive team as anybody the last 3 weeks. They did whatever they wanted yesterday.
Yeah, starting to pile up. When did you get a real sense? And the answer is probably not kickoff, because there was some back and forth, but when did you get a real sense this was you can kind of get that smell test of a blowout game coming in the NFL, and it probably was halfway through the second quarter, I'd guess.
Well, you know what's funny? I kind of got that sense when they started. They made three straight completions to Golden Tate, and like I don't know, and maybe it's too much fantasy football, but I'm a sucker for going underneath to guys. Like Golden Tate made three straight catches underneath. And to me, and the Patriots do this as well as anybody, you know that, with Edelman and now Amendola in the slot, it just seems to open everything up. And the second that you got a guy like Golden Tate, and we saw Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah, and they're running these little crossing seam routes, then all of a sudden, you're getting more and more single coverage on Megatron. He did what he did.
So your sports weekend continues. You had originally had high hopes of attending your first NHL game, because you saw him last year in the O of Connor McDavid live, and it would be tonight against the Detroit Red Wings. You're going to have to settle for Oscar Klefbom and Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Oh, and I hear
and Taylor Hall.
Justin Schultz might make his return, I read.
Yes. That has gotten secondary ticket market has gone awash with excitement over that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm my first time. Have we seen Detroit yet? I think it's my first time watching Larkin, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
Tonight. But yeah, no, Oilers and Wings tonight, and it's a hot ticket. You know what? Yesterday was a hot ticket too, right? It's Thanksgiving in the States. You know that. By the way, you were in Detroit for. Everyone says hi.
Everyone does.
Strange, right? Like, because you know your show ended in Detroit. And it was really strange because you picked Toronto as a free agent destination. So strange. Like, I can't, like, I was trying to put two and two together. Like, you go on the air and no free agent ever wants to go to Toronto, yet you did. Well, I still can't get my
I know. I've been trying to tell you it's about money and your wife's happiness. That's all it ends up being at the end of the day, I think. Milwaukee and Indianapolis didn't make the cut. Now, before you go, this is the second of three straight Grey Cup weekends. Very odd for a Western Canadian young man to spend Grey Cup weekend in Michigan. But you'll be back by the time the game starts, won't you?
Oh no, I'll be back. That's my bad. Like that was a misstep on my part. So like my buddy who I'm here with is
the
world's outside of Detroit, the world's only diehard Detroit Lions fan. So like he got married a couple years ago. So for his wedding present, we went to Detroit and I flew him out and we went to a Lions game, and we planned it so much in advance, and it just so happened to be on the Sunday that the Saskatchewan Roughriders were hosting the Grey Cup in Regina, and I had to watch it here. And as much fun as we had, and it was even great watching, you know, the Riders do their thing and win the Grey Cup at home for the first time in 100 years, I was really kind of ashamed that I wasn't there. I don't feel the same way about
Winnipeg.
Eskimos, red, black. So that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Now, we've got your terrible 10 picks submitted. We know you're on a four-game losing streak. The last four chronological games you've picked, you've lost. We've pointed out all three 4 o'clock games and the Bengals-Arizona. So, there's some redemption. There's a redemption possibility here. Any preview of the picks an hour from now?
I'll tell you what. I am a believer in the New York Giants this week. I am locking them up. It's one of those weird lines because like they're begging -2.5. They're begging you to bet on the New York Giants, but I took the bait and I did. I really like Eli this week in Washington. So there's a little preview. Yeah, you have them, but I'll tell you what. One of your favorite spots, the Greektown Casino. If my night at the Greektown Casino last night is any indication, the worm has turned, the luck has turned, or I used it up all last night.
Or, law of averages, and it's a 2-8 Brady-esque Fat Tigers fan week screen.
That's true. But, hey, all of Detroit says hi. They miss you. They want you back. They're willing to talk contract with you.
Yeah. All right, to pass on to Ken Holland my continued displeasure over the Jonathan Erickson extension later on tonight, if you could. So don't know how he does it.
Pretty good pick.
Yep, don't know how he does it. It's amazing. Yeah,
yeah.
And that
keep ripping.
For first rounder for Kyle Quinsky. Quincy, he's a freaking genius is what he is.
Oh, you're the only guy that can rip Ken Holland. Like the best GM we've seen in sports in probably 50 years.
Oh, he's the guy working here right now. He's the guy working here right now, not allowing facial hair on any of the Maple Leafs, I think. He's 83 years old, and no one's allowed to have a mustache. It's 2015. All right, safe travels back. We'll see you Monday.
See you later.
Andrew Walker joining us. Noted Walker. Coming up, a Jose Bautista contract extension. What would it look like? And is the very, very rare case where you might pay a star player for what he has done, not what he's about to do. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more Brady and Walker. On your TV at Sportsnet 360. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's a Friday Terrible 10 coming up in about an hour from now. Before that, Doug McLean, less than terrible hockey analysis. Trying to promote him. Come on. And as well, we'll talk to Travis Lule, BC Lions quarterback, hanging and banging with Arash Madani in Winnipeg. I'll never use any of that sentence again. Madani, banging, Winnipeg, nothing. But he's out there working for Sportsnet, as a matter of fact. He's doing a great job, actually. When you watch Sportsnet Central, you see him, and he's doing fantastic. A Grey Cup champion 4 scant years ago on home turf at BC Place for the BC Lions. So we saw this morning. Jose Bautista, there's no news on him per se, but MLBTradeRumors.com put a good piece together. Mark Polishuk put a good piece together on Jose Bautista and his contract scenario. He's a free agent after next year. Club option was exercised for this year, so he'll make $13 million this year. Now, we know he's been underpaid. He'll make 14, I should say, next year. We know he's been underpaid and over-delivered in terms of value. A lot of times this can transpire, and you can have a good year at your work, a bad year at your work, and unless you're working on commission or some kind of bonus, you don't get asked to give back. But you also don't get to knock on the door and ask for more, because that's a difficult scenario. It's great to go in when you feel like you got some leverage and things are going well, and you go, hey, how about a little something here? But you'd hate it if they clawed back to you and said, this year, not as good as last year. We'd like to get some back from you. We think you're slightly overpaid. Now, no one's ever going to accuse Jose Bautista of being overpaid. No one's also going to accuse him of not being less than altruistic. He's going to want the biggest contract for the biggest term for the biggest money he can get at age 36 a year from now. So what happened on this site, Mark Polishuk put together a lot of stats that back him up, never mind the fact of what he means here in Toronto, and thinks Jose Bautista is at least a $20 million player. Tim Dirks of the same site says 5 free agents this winter who are kind of known as boppers, or at the very least Alex Gordon, not a bopper per se, but a guy that can hit with a modicum of power, gets on base a lot, excellent defense. You saw him in the playoffs. You know what he can do. But Jason Hayward, Chris Davis, Justin Upton, Jonas Cespedes, and Alex Gordon are all going to get deals of $20 million. And his concept is Jose Bautista would get a similar amount of money with certainly less term than Hayward and probably less term than Davis. So how does it sound to be in the Bautista ballpark if you're at 4 years, $92 million? Does that seem excessive to pay Jose Bautista $23 million a year, starting in 2017 until he turns 40? Does that seem hefty? Our number is 416-870-0590, star 590. Market value is going to factor into this. The suitors will factor into this. How many teams are interested? How many teams see an opening? How many teams feel like that's good business for them? And even if it's not great business, it makes your team better in the short run. We all know what the story is with a lot of these deals. The first 2 or 3 years are great. The next 3 are okay. The next 3 are utter disasters. But if you put up enough results in the first 3 to 6 years, you'll end up being okay with how bad the last 3 years are. If there'd been more winning with the New York Yankees, there might be less angst about deals like CC Sabathia has and Alex Rodriguez has, besides the obvious. So if I tell you right now that later today, Jose Bautista will accept a 4-year, $92 million contract offer extension, would you think that's good for Bautista? Would you steer clear if you're the Jays? Or is this that one player you got to be really careful about paying for the past? Businesses suffer from this all the time. There's 2 things I think businesses, and a little bit of reading I do. I've never owned a business. I've never run a business. I may never run a business. But there's 2 things I think businesses do. One is overpay for free agents. Okay. And that's in any context. You're better off paying your own people because they're known commodities. You better like your own people, because if you haven't hired the right people, someone will replace you to hire the right people. And the other one is overpaying for the past. You might have loved Jose Bautista's 50 home run season in 2010. You loved the bat flip. You thought game 6 of the ALCS was great. He has really put himself in a great position here because of just the postseason alone. Imagine a year where the Jays don't make the playoffs. There isn't all these trades. There aren't all these sellouts. And they finished 86-76. It costs Jose Bautista money. I don't know tangibly how much, but it's there, right? I don't know if it's $10 million on a four-year deal, and he's getting 82 for four instead of 92 for four. A few swings of the bat bought Jose Bautista millions of dollars more. Blue Jays have a PR thing also where you'd like to keep a player till the very, very end of his career. Remember a lot of the 92 and 93 champs? They didn't all retire here. Very few of them did. Now, many of them ended up being hired guns, but let's not act like it was great to see Robbie Alomar play for the Orioles, Indians, or Mets, even though it seemed time to move on. Roy Halladay, we can talk now frankly and honestly about seeing him as a Philly. It made a lot of people ill. You want to see him here. You want to see a longer career. Logan in Toronto, you're on Brady and Walker. 4-year deal, $92 million for Jose Bautista. Is this a winning deal, or would you not make that deal?
I wouldn't make that deal. I mean, as much as I love the guy and everything he's done for the city, I think it's kind of like a trap contract almost. I mean, you want to give him the money, but you just know that he's going to go decline a bit in the next few years, and his home run totals are going to go down.
Is there a deal you would give him? What's reasonable? What would you offer him?
I mean, I would offer him probably similar to what he's making now, but maybe a bit of a raise, but he probably wouldn't take that, knowing that he can probably get more on the open market. But I don't know. I just think that's too much money to give him at this point in time.
Yeah, if I'm Jose, he's going to market. I don't think there's going to be an extension. It'd be great if there was. I'm trying to be a realist here and say I think he wants to go, and I think he wants this. For once in his career, he wants to go. So you will have to pay proper amount that anybody via free agency would pay if you're the Jays and you're pitching him this offseason. Second part of that is a lot of Jose's success. Like, I'd be worried if this was a player who was really successful in his 20s and okay in his early 30s and then fell off a cliff. And even though he did great things 7-8 years ago, Jose Bautista did great things 7 weeks ago. Not 7 years ago. You know how long the difference in time is between a week and a year, right? There's 52 goes into one. So the good times are still here for Jose Bautista. He's still a top perennial top five MVP candidate. Nobody walked more in Major League Baseball. Three or four hitters a year are more productive. Gary in Kitchener, you're on Brady and Walker. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Great.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I think this is a no-brainer. What are you guys, kidding me? Hotel Bautista, what he's done, Joey Bats, the fans he's brought in this year. He doesn't do the bat flip and all that going on. This guy, like, deserves what he's getting.
There has to be a limit. If Jose Bautista went in and said, how about $100 million for four? Like, there has to be a limit.
We're not talking Albert Pujols, what's his name here?
Pujols works, sure.
Yeah, come on, look what he's getting, and everyone. Look what the guy's done for the team, the franchise. The fans love him. He is one of the faces of the franchise.
I'll tell you what, though. These are often two-way streets. Happens a lot in our business. The Jays have done a lot for Jose Bautista as well. They've pushed him out there. Maybe the temptation at times is to say, do we like everything about Jose Bautista? We like most things. Yeah, sure we do. But we've brought in some new stars. If Josh Johnson had turned into a Cy Young Award winner, you wouldn't have seen him in more commercials. Remember, Jose Bautista was on this team, and you could make the argument at times. Let's take booster juice away for a sec. There was a push for Brett Laurie, and there was a push for J.P. Arencibia. Those guys were selling a lot of jerseys. Those guys were in a lot of ads. Those guys were everywhere. Hey, do the winter caravan. Be fun. Couple of bros hanging out. Oh, they're in the Dumb and Dumber suits. Isn't that original? They pushed them out there pretty significantly. They would have liked to push out Jose Reyes more, but he couldn't stay healthy. Everybody loved Jose Reyes. We got a different story now with Jose Reyes post the domestic dispute arrest, to which he pled not guilty to earlier this week. I think there's a limit to where the Blue Jays will go, but I do know for Mark Shapiro, and if it's Tony LaCava or if it's another general manager, they have a number in mind right now. They know if Jose and his representative knocked on the door, they'd be ready. they'd be ready with what they can do and ready with what they can't do. But if Jose wants to go to market, and I think there's just too strong a possibility that he's going to, then none of this matters for another year anyway. But it goes to show another really, really good year. And Jose Bautista is in that stratosphere, $20, $25 million. We're very happy to have our next guest on. He is, of course, a Grey Cup champion from 4 years ago, was named the game's most valuable player, and had a phenomenal year, the most outstanding player as well with the BC Lions, of course. Here is Travis Lule, who's working for Sportsnet this week alongside the venerable Arash Medetti. It's been great to see you on TV. Has journalism and broadcasting, had that always been a great interest for you, Travis?
It's not necessarily something that I studied by any means, but, playing quarterback, you get used to being in front of the camera and answering questions and obviously knowing the game of football quite well. So it's, in a way, kind of prepared me for that.
Yeah, it's funny how it works, because now you can, instead of getting asked dumb questions, you can be the one to ask them sometimes. It's weird how that works. It can happen periodically, right?
That's exactly right.
How important is it to have a great start in the Grey Cup? Like, those kind of questions get asked to players all the time, and I'm thinking, it's not unimportant. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you said it.
I noticed also, I don't know how much you keep in touch with your school, but I saw, and it's bad news, Montana State lost to the big rival, Ride Montana, last week. I was looking this week because everybody plays this week, the Apple Cup, Michigan, Ohio State, but I saw that your school has played last week. And you never lost to your rival, did you? You were 4-0, 3-0 against them?
Well, actually, we were 3-1.
So okay.
We did lose 1 year, but yeah, we won 3 out of 4 in my 4 year tenure there, and that's something that the classic guys that I went to school with, to this day, we have a little bit of bragging rights about if we ever meet any of our buddies from that other school.
I would say that's very reasonable. So you saw this Edmonton Eskimos team early in the season. Their evolution to where they are now, where they weren't necessarily favorites. It looked like a very wide open West with you guys. No one ever expects Saskatchewan to have a year like they had. So it looked a lot more wide open. When it's all said and done, Edmonton clearing away, ran away with the Western Division. When did you start to get a feel that they looked like a special team to you?
Really, a few weeks after Mike Riley came back is when you kind of started to see it. And you knew defensively they're a very strong football team, and they were very competitive. Even after Mike had gotten hurt, they were still one of the better teams in the league. So you knew from the get-go this was going to be a good football team this year. But like you said, they ran the table in the back half of the season, put themselves in great position to host a West Final and ultimately be playing in this game. But you did sense, too, that they had something going on. There were some really close games. It wasn't like every game was a blowout, and it's not all. That's obviously not always the case when you win however many in a row. I think they've won 9 in a row now. A couple of those games were really hard fought, but honestly, those games, those types of games, give you confidence that even if, say, you don't play your best game, they played a game in Hamilton, they just squeaked out. They played a game in Winnipeg. Sean White hit a field goal, a 50-plus yard field goal in the game's last play to win it. We played them tough twice in Edmonton with the BC Lions this year and had fourth-quarter leads, double-digit fourth-quarter leads both times, and Edmonton found ways to win those games. So you just got the sense that this is a team that knows how to win games, and that always bodes well when it comes to playoff football.
Travis Lule, Grey Cup champion in 2011, MVP of the Grey Cup, our guest on Brady and Walker, across the country on Sportsnet 360, here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And I don't mean to dismiss the 14-4 Stampeders, but you said it, they ran the table in the last half of the season. Sometimes that hot team, and we see it all the time in the NFL, you guys alone won some complex tiebreakers and got the first seed in 2011, but there were three 11-7 teams, and by playing as well as you did late and a couple other head-to-heads, you guys got the home advantage and got that bye week, and that's, I don't even need to tell you how important that is.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Earning that bye week is essentially earning a first-round win in the playoffs, right? So, yeah, that's hugely important. And like you said, the playing well in the back half is really what it's all about. This is a very long season. Teams take shape. Things happen. Guys get hurt, so new guys get plugged in and want to be playing your best football and have your best rhythm of the season in that back half. And you even saw it in a 2012 Toronto team that won the Grey Cup, a team that was very mixed in the first half of the season, but at the very end, they were the team playing the best football, and they earned that championship that season. So, Edmonton did that. They peaked at the right time. They said Mike's thrown for over 300 yards the last 4 weeks, and that's not necessarily something that they had hung their hat on the last 2 years. That Edmonton team was being that explosive on offense. So with their offense playing at that high a clip and that defense being the steady force that they've been over the last couple of seasons, they really look like a tough football team right now.
Tell me your observations as a current player of this Ottawa story. You were rehabbing your shoulder and had your surgery most of last season, but you sort of got more of a firsthand experience. It's a lot of people have really liked the story because I was a kid in Canada. The Rough Riders were a very, very big deal, though an unsuccessful franchise with wins and losses. They go away. They try it again. It goes even worse. And I think we all wondered whether there'd ever be football again in Ottawa. So this story's captivated an awful lot of people out east, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Well, yeah. You know what? Even as a player, it's an incredible story. It really is. And it gives you hope. It's one of those things that you'll lean on for years. Coaches will when you talk about a team who was 2-16 one year, well, how do you feel good going into this next year, knowing you have some of the same players and the same coaching staff in place? Well, what gives you a belief that you can be that much better and even potentially play for a championship that next season? And people will say, well, look at what the Ottawa Redblacks did in 2015. So it's one of those types of stories that people will cling to. And they've done a lot of good things there. They really have. You got to give that coaching staff a ton of credit. I think, Rick Campbell was awarded the Coach of the Year last night, and I think, it was a very well-deserved honor for him and that entire staff and organization, because it was a far cry from playing in the Grey Cup game a year ago for that Ottawa team, and he knew it was going to take some time, and I think doing it in 2 years is a lot quicker than maybe even the people on the inside would have expected.
I think so, too. I hope you're excited to play in Toronto next year. As you know, leaving Rogers Centre, co-tenants with the Blue Jays, and I think you'll get more of a Montreal McGill Stadium atmosphere next year at BMO, where Toronto FC plays. It's pretty necessary. Vancouver's such a standalone, amazing, world-class city. You know that, but we all want the CFL to mean a little more in this city, and I think getting outdoors, getting down by the lake, getting their own home, and being able to sort of put their own coat of paint on it, I think that's going to help things.
Well, I do too. I think it's an exciting time for those reasons. There was a lot of times where the atmosphere didn't necessarily do justice to the product when you were at the Rogers Centre, and that's just kind of the way it played out. So it's kind of gives our league, the Toronto Argonauts organization, a chance to hit a little bit of a restart button, a refresh button, and I think that's good for everybody. And like you say, the intimate setting that BMO Field will provide is exciting. You get that at McGill, and you get that at a few other places around the league, but just the intimate setting, it bodes well for the CFL, and again, I think that fresh start is another good sign.
I'm glad you said that as a player, because even college football, like you play your rivals or you play them in the NFL, you go to Mosaic in Regina. You don't ever want to see, you're a visiting player, you don't ever want to see 16,000 people in the place. You want to win. You want to go in and beat them, and you want them yelling at you, but you want a whole sellout crowd leaving really frustrated after the game's over. That's the way it goes.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Whether you're exactly right. If you're the home team, obviously the more raucous fans you got screaming and hollering that have your back, the better. But if you're the road team, the environment's that much better when it's an extremely hostile, loud, noisy crowd. And that's why, players do love playing at places like Mosaic Stadium or a rivalry game here in Winnipeg where the fans get rocking. So those are the most exciting games to play in, without question. And it really does. It energizes players in the field. You feel that type of energy from the crowd when you're playing. And so I think that's important to the product.
Really appreciate you coming on. And it's been great seeing you on Sportsnet. More talking from you, less of the other guy. I know the other guy, so I can say that. More of you. You stretch those sentences out. Leave him a little wanting more. How about that?
I tell you what, I'll pass that info along and see what happens.
Oh, that's a big mistake. He'll get me for that. Thanks for doing this, Travis. Greatly appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
There's Travis Lule, 2011 Grey Cup champion and MVP. I remember being on a stair climber in my basement. It was the first time I used it, and I watched that Grey Cup in 2011, and BC was dominant, winning that particular game. And we all knew the game was in Toronto the next year. And then, Ricky Ray trade happens. What? That was weird. How did that happen? Why would the Eskimos do? Very strange. So the CFL has a new logo. Can we get it? We'll get a shot of it really quick. There's a lot of people that have weighed in on this. Someone thought it looked like a bit like a tombstone. Like if you put the years below, right below the flag. And it looks like someone forgot the flag. Go back. J.D. Bunk, as our producer, agrees with this. How about a multicolored leaf? Who complains about a multicolored leaf? We had things right in the 50s and 60s for once. I know that's not exactly horse and buggy territory, but bring back the one with the leaf. I think they've made a mistake on this one. Coming up, we'll ask you, where do you think the CFL will be 10 years from now? It's a fun time to do this kind of question. And tons of NHL on Sportsnet today. Doug McClain weighs in on the games happening now and the games happening tonight. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.